You know, isn't it interesting how when someone gets up to introduce the speaker, they say, "I want to introduce you to my friend." And then the speaker's trapped. I mean, what are they going to say? "It's not my friend?" But the truth of the matter is I've known this guy a long time. Long before I was able to take and call Lowell my friend, he was talking to groups regionally and nationally, expressing his ideas on economics and how he was futuristic thinking and how we should be thinking and towards the future and using economics to determine where we ought to go. Now, Lowell and I, we did share a stint of time together as he used to call me boss. It was only a courtesy thing. I was on the Board of Regents down at New Mexico State University, but he's only there because he wants to be. You see, Lowell is quite the accomplished individual. See, he's a Regents Professor of Economics, Agriculture, and Genetic Engineering at New Mexico State University, became the Dean of the College of Agriculture and Home Economics in January 2006. He works nationally and internationally with corporations and organizations as well as USDA, Department of Labor, Interior, Defense, Education, Energy, and the World Bank. He's helping them do futuristic planning, thinking out of the box, that kind of thing. He is a very dynamic individual. He works because he loves education. He loves kids. He loves the energy they bring to the table. And he loves the exchange. I hope you love Lowell Cabinet. Good morning, Lowell.
Thank you very much, Blake, for that very, very kind introduction. Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Oh, come on. You can do a little better than that. Good morning.
Good morning.
It is such a pleasure and honor. I grew up on a ranch in the Panhandle of Texas, and so I can say this totally without being a little bit biased about having lived in New Mexico. But one of the first things I learned when I moved to the state of New Mexico to start my career at New Mexico State University was I needed to get to know the Curtis family, because they were strong supporters of agriculture, and as everybody said, they're just wonderful people. And over the years, I found that to be so, and it's a pleasure to live in the same state and be part of it. And Blake is very humble. I did get to know Blake many years ago, as because of their association and support of agriculture and the community. But you know, people you respect even more, not only when they're top of their profession, but when they give back. And Blake gave back in the state of New Mexico by being a state legislature, and in a state that the only state legislature that is what we call citizen legislature, which basically means you pay to serve in New Mexico. And he stepped up to the plate and did that. In a city that Santa Fe, New Mexico, which is the third most costly city in America to live in, and the stipend to be a state representative was about a breakfast. So you really want to do that. And then I guess I probably admired him the most when he decided to be a regent at New Mexico State University, because if you think it's tough running a business, you ought to try to run herd over a bunch of half-wit and crazy professors, because we're sick and demented in every way. And he did it with honor and grace, and thank you, Blake. But I also want to do, and for you young people, I want to say how important somebody, when they put their arm around your shoulder and just say, "You're doing the right thing." And I don't know if Robert Thurston is still in the room. Robert, are you still in the room? Okay. Robert, stand up and let everybody see. Robert was one of those people that many years ago, when I was around talking weird ideas, I never will forget, he just took me to the side after one meeting when I was kind of really very, very weird, and put his arm around me and said, "I'm doing that stuff right now." Thank you, Robert. You've been a great mentor over the years. I appreciate it. Gives you hope that things aren't quite so weird. But, you know, I am honored, and I don't use PowerPoint, so let me just give you the basic directions here. Those of you who have heard me speak know that I want to give you some numbers and directions. This is up. This is down. And this is I'm just weird beyond words, okay? And I am so honored to be part of this, but you know, when you get as old as I am, you're just honored to be vertical on a given day. And you know, a few months ago, I turned 64, and you know, it dawned on me, I'm an old man. And then I'm thinking, holy cow, no birthday ever bothered me, but that one did. I'm going, sit. I go, okay, how long have I got left on this planet? So I start doing the math, and I start reading every epidemiological long-term study. I go, okay, average American lives to be 79, so I got 15 years. I go, well, wait a minute, that's not true, because, wait a minute, that's got men and women in it. Average American man only lives to be 76. Women live forever. Somehow it averages 79. But I'm sitting there going, 76? I got 12 years left. That's it. 12 years left on this planet. I'm going, how do I get more? So I'm starting looking and go, okay, let's see. I drink red wine, so I'm going to add a year for that. But then my doctor reminded me what moderate alcohol consumption was, so I had to take that one off the bank. And then I noticed that my friends in Canada, the average Canadian man lives to be 78. So I'm thinking, I'm moving to Canada. Okay. And then I checked their immigration policy, and it seems you have to have a marketable skill and be of high moral fiber, so I couldn't get in the country. So anyway, I had to take that one off the plot. So then I'm going, wait a minute, though. Married men get a married premium. Married men live on average 3 years longer than single men. It's true. Married men live 3 years longer on average than single men. Women do not get it. You live forever, so you don't get the marriage premium. Actually, there is some good science that came out in the last 6 months. I want to share it with you, so hold that thought on why women don't get the marriage premium. It's quite important to us in agriculture, okay? But I'm married, so I've got 3 years, okay? So, and we also found in surveys that married men are more willing to die, but they do live 3 years longer on average than single men. And you know the reason single men don't get the marriage premium, because the last thing a single man says before he dies is, hold my beer and watch this. I say, well, single men don't get it, okay? So I've got 3 years on, so I'm up to 79, and then there's something called the paradox of aging, which basically says this. The older you get, the more likely you are to continue to get old until you just die. And that's why it's called a paradox. Okay. Actually, what it means is this. A 60-year-old has a higher probability of making it to 65 than a 20-year-old, because what's going to kill you between 20 and 60, the 60-year-old's already lived through. Are you with me? So when I do that, I can stretch it out to 84. Okay. 20 years. That's all I got left if I'm average. And I got to thinking, I think those 20 years are going to be a whole lot different than the previous 20. What do you think? Because at the beginning of the previous 20, even though the cell phone, as Andy very eloquently told you, was invented 40 years ago, it was only 20 years ago when we finally started basically using it. And in those last 20 years, we finally got a term called, if you don't know something, just Google it. And Blake and I live in a state that was part of the cradle of the development of the internet, which was basically a bunch of nerd scientists and military people at various laboratories and bases just wanted to communicate with each other for a military reason, and now it is the number one change factor in the world, and its number one use is not military, it is Facebook. Who would have forecasted it? Nobody did. But let me tell you, I'm not going to try to forecast, because the numbers just came out. You probably saw it about my profession. Oh, gosh, we're bad. Okay, let me tell you how bad we are, okay, on forecasting. Nobody knows the future, but let me tell you how bad economists are. We took 7,000 forecasts in the last decade that we could truly track and find out whether we were accurate or not. Take individual stock forecasts and stock market. Take any economic variable you want, unemployment, growth in gross domestic product, take any factor you want, we forecasted them all, and our accuracy rate, get this, was 47%. Do you understand what that means? You can flip a coin and beat us 3%. So all I want to try to do with you today is to think positively about some things in a phenomenally different way, if I could, just be a little bit different for you. I love George Patton for many reasons, but one of the reasons I loved him was he made the statement that no battle plan survives contact with the enemy. Because when the bullets start flying, guess what? You're going to change your plan. But he also said this, no good general ever goes into a battle without a plan. Not that they know what's going to happen in the battle, it's just the ones that have planned for it are the ones that are the most agile and the ones that can do what? Make the change a little bit faster than somebody else because they've thought about it. So I want you to do that with me. in a kind of an interesting thing. I tell students all the time, quit watching TV. Okay? Because all it's going to do is drag you down. All it's going to do is tell you what. Yeah, the talking heads are on the program telling you what. Oh, the stock market's going to go be up today. The stock market's going to be down. Oh, everybody hates us. Nobody likes us. Guess we ought to go eat worms. No. I watch it sometimes, and I don't know whether to commit suicide or go bowling. It just drives me crazy. So what you need to do is read history. Because if you read history, you find out some interesting things. Guess what? Some of the things that you think are the most compelling in problems, guess what? We've been through them. We got over them. We made it through. So read history. And you can't be anything but an optimist. Guarantee it. Okay? Because if you start reading history, you find out what? Not what the talking heads want you to hear about today, but what you'll hear about is this. If you'll look at it long term, and if you saw the cover of The Economist magazine last week, what happened to the poverty rate in the world? Folks, it's gone down. We've gone in the last decade from 2 billion people in what we're living in, what we call abject poverty, less than $1.25 a day, to today only 750 million. That's a lot, but what's the direction? Because guess what? Phenomenal things are happening. Young people, and even those of you that are kind of older like me, this has never been a better time in agriculture. Never. Because you've got 7 billion people on this planet right now. 1 billion of us lead a really good life. We got to eat souffles this morning. Pretty good, wasn't it? Okay. That's a pretty good life. And those 1 billion, guess what? They've given us the most differentiated agriculture we've ever seen on the planet. Because we didn't measure this one 15 years ago. It's part of what you're going to have in your trade association and in your meetings. Guess what? Didn't measure it 15 years ago. But it's 4% of the food sector and what? Growing. And it is what? Organic. We didn't measure this one 5 years ago. Now it's 1.7% of the food sector and growing. Gluten-free. Huh. Isn't it interesting? Gluten-free. Medical science tells us that 0.1% of the population has any form of celiac disease. 0.1%. But it's 1.7% of the food sector and what? Growing. There's one guy telling me, well, I know I'm not got celiac disease, but I just feel better when I don't eat gluten. You feel better because you don't eat 3 loaves of bread at every sitting. And in this world, and you know it, we now have you seen this one? Organic vodka. What? Like 90 proof isn't enough to kill everything in the bottle? But I met the lady that was promoting it. She goes, well, you can tease me all you want to, but I'm pushing the production people because I can sell 10 times more than I can get produced right now. I go, who is drinking organic vodka? And she goes, people that go to spas. Well, just celebrated last month with my mom over on a ranch in Clarendon, 86-year-old woman. 11-year breast cancer survivor. Both knees replaced. You think she's ever been to a spa? No, because her generation, the generation that came back from World War II, they saw poverty and famine in the world, didn't they? The Pacific Theater of Operation, European Theater of Operation. They came back and they told our Iowa states and our University of Kentucky's and our Illinois and our New Mexico states, all of our land grants and all of our universities for that matter, and told us what? You need to learn to grow 2 blades of grass where one grew before because this world is starving. And guess what we did? And isn't it phenomenal? In 1970, we could not provide enough calories for the slightly under 4 billion people on this planet. We could not provide enough calories, which is 2,700 calories on average. We couldn't provide 2,700 calories for 4 billion people. And I'm very happy to report to you, guess what? We've added 500 to it since 1970. And now with 7 billion people on the planet, we got 2,698 calories. Thanks to you. That's phenomenal. 7 billion people now have enough calories to live on. Couldn't fathom that. And they can drink organic vodka. Okay. Powerful, phenomenal. What a time. What a time to be in agriculture, because guess what? But let me tell you about the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation. This is the most pronounced and phenomenal one. They got $3 or $2. okay? Well, let me tell you what they found out not too long ago. They started out on a great quest, very noble, to help in impoverished areas of the world for the other billions of people that don't do so well. See, I told you, we got those 7 billion. We got 1 billion that lead a real good life. Got another billion that lead a pretty good life. Got another billion that rose out of abject poverty into middle class. And so we got about 3 billion people. They're pretty okay. But you got 4 billion people that basically every day they're wondering, how do you get by? You got the calories, sometimes not available to them, but we produce it in agriculture. But you got 4 billion people. So they wanted to work on health issues. Noble. But as they worked on these health issues, they found out, you know what? We can't separate what these people are doing in their lives from their health. So they started looking at, guess what? Over half of the farmers in these impoverished areas in the world are women. And they found a staggering thing. When they gave the same resources to women, better seeds, a little bit of education, a micro loan, $5, $10. 30% increase in output. You women are going, yeah. We knew it. 30% increase. What's interesting is 30% increase for 4 billion people. What do you think the future of agriculture is? Get a 30% increase on 4 billion by just giving it to women? And guess what happened? When they got 30% more, what did the women choose to spend it on? Education. Education? And better food for their family. They're hardwired for what? Family. Give the 30% to men. What did we choose to do with it? Well, as the old saying goes, give a man a fish, he eats for a day. Teach him how to fish, and he sits in the boat and drinks beer all day. Actually, I'm not picking on men, because men are hardwired for protection. So guess what? Their attitude when they got a little bit more money was to spend it on protection because of their family, because they found out, guess what? A better diet, get to go to school, doesn't mean anything if you're robbed or it's taken away from you on the way. It does take a family, doesn't it? Interesting thing. 30% more, folks. Most brilliant piece of research out there. Watch it. Phenomenal increases in that. So I put it this way, though. I want to give you this thing because I want to come back to why women don't get the marriage premium. And I say it this way, and it's philosophical, but I want you to understand it because it's important to us in agriculture. It's important to us in the seed industry. It's important to you because you're leaders in your community to understand this. And it's one of those things that just I love. All of us who grew up in agriculture instinctively know this. Okay, and it was this. You want to have healthy people. Can't separate them from plants and animals and people. You can try. Doesn't work. Okay? Let's start first with people for just a second, because it gets to why the women don't get the marriage premium. Okay? You want to have healthy people? You got it. We like people. We like to be around them. Okay? My wife is 5 feet tall, weighs 100 pounds when it's raining. I call her my little 100-pound blonde bombshell. I mean, we've been married 29 years, been together 33. I love this woman. I just... Because it could be biochemistry just slapping me upside the head. Okay? Because all I know is this. When I'm around her, I'm just giddy. I'm just happy. When I'm not, I drink. Either way, I'm giddy. Okay? And I just never understood. It's love. Well, it probably is. I just love her. But you know what? We're finding out this, and you women know this, and men that have observed it, we know this. A woman can go through the most difficult child labor on the planet, most difficult child labor on the planet, and the moment that new infant is put in her bosom, the instinct is to smile. That life is in their arms. And all health science could say about it over the years was, well, it's just the mother-child bond. Oh, really? Can you narrow it down a little bit? Well, guess what we finally found out in the last 2 years? When you're around somebody you like, generally your children, but not always. Generally your spouse or significant other, but not always. But when you're around somebody you like, your body to date has been proven to produce 114 known steroids. All of them good steroids. They're what builds your immune system. And the most prevalent one is one called oxytocin. And if you know anything about oxytocin, It's the most prevalent one known as the bonding chemical. It just makes you giddy. Just found that out. Isn't that interesting? Phenomenal thing. And if you doubt that little thing, let me tell you something else. When I was pulling those longevity studies down because I knew I was an old man, I found an interesting thing. We pulled 114 long-term epidemiological studies down and pulled these out of hundreds because they measured a variable but didn't choose to include it in the studies, and they found this. Do you have rich and deep social connections, or do you not? Are you the Unabomber? And what they found out was staggering. If you have rich and deep social connections, you die from all causes, at a rate 1/4 of those that don't. It is totally, mathematically, 100% reciprocal. Turn it on its end. If you are the Unabomber or live in isolation, you will die from all causes at 4 times the rate of those that have rich and deep social connections. Trust me, that's statistically significant. And then Carnegie Mellon did an interesting study and found this same thing. Do you have rich and deep social connections or do you not? Because if you do, you will get infections at the rate of 1/2 of those that don't. You want to have healthy people. Can't separate them from people. Isn't that interesting? When Abraham Lincoln had the wisdom to sign both the Morrill Act in 1862 and the Transcontinental Railroad in 1862, he also signed another piece of legislation called the Department of Agriculture. After his untimely death, then-President Andrew Johnson decided to send a young man by the name of Oliver Kelly into the devastated South, said we've got to help them with their agriculture. When Oliver Kelly got down there, he came back and his report essentially said this, you know what, it's an abundant place and they really are pretty good farmers. They don't need our help on farming, but what they do need is there help on the fact that they are isolated and they're not around people. We've got to help them with that. That was in 1862. Yeah, you want to have healthy people. You can't separate them from people. Okay? Comes back to why women don't get the marriage premium. Okay? We ask men, name your best friend. You know who we name first? Our spouse. No, you can't name your spouse. Name your next best friend. You know the next friend we name? Our dog. Men name instinctively the first two friends we have, our spouse and our dog. No, you can't name both of those. Name as fast as you can. Male friends, close male friends. We're speechless. We're going, oh, well, I think George likes me. I don't. We struggle. We name three. We ask women, name as fast as you can. Female friends, you can't shut up. And the time it takes us to name three, you name 10. You don't get the marriage premium because guess what? You already have rich and deep social connections. You want to have healthy people, folks. We're finding out every day. Got to have them around people, okay? And I know you're sitting there going, what's that got to do with our concord? Well, it has everything when we design our communities. Because I guarantee you this, every urban area is trying to be more rural because they're understanding, guess what? It's important to have beehives on the top of a skyscraper. And it's important to have trees. My wife is a landscape architect. First 20 years of her career, she designed parks and commercial buildings. The last 5 years of her career, 100% of her portfolio have been green roofs, green walls, riding trails for horses, leashless dog parks, peace gardens for hospice, healing gardens for hospitals. You want to have healthy people, you can't separate them from people, and you can't separate them from plants. See, when you're around that person you like, those good steroids, takes about 30 minutes for them to start being identical. If you have plants around you, guess what happens? It happens in about 20 minutes. It's a beautiful room, but it's sterile. You'd all been a little more giddy if we'd had some plants in here. I had this wonderful dog, a Chesapeake Bay Retriever. truly, other than my wife, most important creature I've ever lived with on this planet. Name was Tango. She's a Chesapeake Bay Retriever. Lived on this earth 15 years and 60 days. God, I love that dog. What I remember most about her, though, is the last few weeks of her life when she would be unsettled. I'd lay on the bed with her, put my arm around her, and in about 20 minutes her breathing would ease. She'd go to sleep. So would I. I just thought I was in love with her. Because it was. What we found out, though, was guess what? Last 6 months, her oxytocin levels and mine in 20 minutes became identical. I want to have healthy people. Can't separate them from plants and animals and people. And who owns the plants and the animals? We do. Don't forget it, folks. It's the most phenomenal revolution going on. I'll give you one more. One of those unintended consequences, okay? And this one came from a gentleman, if you ever have the opportunity and you're in Portland, Oregon, go visit his name, Chuck Eggert. He's one of the most innovative food executives that I know of. He runs a little company called Pacific Foods. Very innovative. But he's now into he saw the organic movement. He's now got 3 organic dairies. I was with him a few months ago, and he said, Lord, I want you to meet my new herdsman. He's from Columbia. I want you to meet him because he's really a smart guy. I want him to tell you the story, though, of why I hired him. I said, okay. So I go over and meet him. He said, Chuck wanted me to find out why he hired you. He said, well, when I was living in Columbia growing up, I read about this Australian medical doctor that had worked with kangaroos and understood kangaroos. And he understood something about kangaroos that was this. You know, they birth their baby pretty quickly, but they keep them in their pouch for several months. The new roo emerges from the pouch because they are next to the mother. When the oxytocin levels become identical and their immune system is what? Strong enough for them to live outside. So he said, what are we doing for premature babies in this country? Oh, we've made great strides over the years, but you know what we do? We tend to isolate them. They have no immune system, so we tend to do what? Isolate them, put them in incubators, keep them protected. And on average, it takes them 5 months before they get out of the hospital. Great strides, not knocking it. He said, but I bet I could beat that. Why don't we start understanding what we learned from kangaroos, that people need to be around people? So he started a process known today with premature babies as kangarooing, which is we'll protect them as much as they can, but they need to be in the bosom of a human. And they found out in the study, guess what? The fathers work equally as well as the mothers. They just need the human contact. And if you ever had somebody that's had a premature baby and they will tell you that story, it'll bring tears to your eyes because they don't spend on average 5 months in the hospital. They spend on average 5 weeks. Called kangarooing. I said, okay, nice story. What's it got to do with the dairy industry? He said, what do we do with those calves, male calves? They don't bring any milk in. So what do we do with the dairy industry? We do what? We sell them as fast as possible? Or we do what? They have no immune system? We put them in isolation, in crates. And he said, I told Chuck, I'm not going to bankrupt you because all I'll do is take 10. Most you'll lose is 10, but they're herd creatures. I think I want to put them together. No, they have no immune system. They may spread the diseases, but I want to try it. And he did. Nationally, incidentally, you know, in the dairy industry, the death rate of those male calves approaches 30%. Chuck's went too. Zero. We're babes in the woods on this one, folks. We don't know all of the relationships between plants and animals and people. But we're the ones that are going to keep making them. Phenomenal. And let me leave you with some technology, though, that's going to help us in this, okay? And you know the generation that grew up with the thing of Blake telling you to turn them off. Isn't it interesting? 150 years almost we've had telephones. And they're all about voice, weren't they? And now, all of a sudden, in the last 4 years, they've gone silent. You don't want to talk on them more anymore, do you? You want to do what? Sit next to each other and text each other. When is this nut going to shut up? Do you agree? Okay. Gone silent. Did you forecast that one? No. we just thought we would talk. And now we text. And then somebody said, pretty wise, old Steve Jobs was pretty wise. He said, you know what, if you're going to carry this thing around, why don't you start making it be what? Ubiquitous. Why don't you start letting it do something for you other than do what? Let you communicate. So somebody very wisely in 2004, 9 years ago, decided what? Let's put a camera on it. What's happened to the number of photographs the average American has taken in the last, and Canadian for that matter, it's a North American number for both Canada and the United States. How many photographs have you taken in the last 9 years? It's up tenfold. You have no idea where they are. They're in cyberspace somewhere, but you got 10 times more photos. Okay? And then somebody very wise said, well, again, at Carnegie Mellon said, let's take this little lens out and put in what's called a software lens. And oh, by the way, when we do that, those of you that are into IT, it's called black and white programming or algorithms where you look at patterns of light and dark. Let's do that one. And then we'll take a molecule of blood. That's all we need, a molecule. But we'll take the amount that if you're a diabetic, you have to take to do your test for. We'll take that, and then we'll do an instant blood test. That's already here. Trying to get it as fast as possible out to the people that are working in the world for blood-borne diseases such as malaria, because by the time you can diagnose it, you are dead. But now you've got something that can be done instantly. And then someone at UCLA said, well, let's take that lens out and put in a molecular lens, which is a molecule of oil and water that electrical impulses will change the focus of 60 times a second. Use black and white programming again. Put in a near-infrared laser. The near-infrared laser will go under your skin for about a tenth of an inch. And then the black and white program is programmed to look at whether that blemish on my skin is benign or cancerous instantly. And then a gentleman in Dallas showed me this one 3 weeks ago. He takes his finger, puts it over his lens, positively identifies him, turns it around, all of his heart data. I said, what's that number mean? He goes, I don't know. I have no idea. My cardiologist says to do it 5 times a day. Because he goes into the cardiologist's computer and guess what? Intelligent default programs does what? Looks at all those parameters, and if there's a problem, then the doctor gets what? An alert. Let's see, do you think that might be valuable? I see you once a year for your physical, or I get it 5 times a day. Get ready, folks, for the revolution in human health is do it yourself. And let's see if I could do that algorithm. Why can't you tell me? Does that seed have a code on it? Has it got a problem? What's the fungus on it? Or let's take a picture of the plant. And now that agronomist can do what? Tell whether you have a wilt in it or not. Whether there's an insect infestation. Are you getting ready, folks? We're babes in the woods. Oh, we're already working on one where you shine it in the cow's eye. And then you can find out she's happy. She doesn't know what's going to happen to her next, but she's happy. Folks, if it's going to revolutionize human health, it's sure going to change the parameters. And one final thing, this one I call, it goes by the popular name now, we call big data. But it really gets back to what we've always called precision or prescription agriculture, because you know that in the seed industry. We're getting so good at prescription agriculture that guess what? We now need, and I saw a panel just a week ago with Raven, a panel of farmers in the Midwest that basically say, we need planters that will let us go over our field and put in 2 to 3, no more than 3 right now because they don't think the mechanical technology is good enough, 2 and 3 hybrids at the same time for the different soil types, for the different things. Are you getting ready, folks? If you said that to somebody 20 years ago, what would they have said? You crazy as a loon. Crazy as a loon. Oh, now it's standard. Okay. So now, the gentleman, Blake knows very well there's a little NASA site outside of Las Cruces. NASA has a site, Lyndon B. Johnson facility. All the communication for the space shuttle comes first to Las Cruces, New Mexico, and then it goes to Goddard, Kennedy, Caltech, wherever. Okay. Starts first there. Rocket Sims, a friend of mine, has been there for years. And when cell phones were just getting popular 20 years ago, he and a colleague, this is how good they are, he and a colleague said, you know what? The problem with cell phones is there's not enough towers out there. But you know what? There's about 12,000 commercial aircraft that take off and land every day in the United States. So they got the timetables, plugged them into the computer, found out that they could bounce the signals off of where these planes are, move them from plane to plane, and guess what? You could have 100% coverage in North America by bouncing the signal off the bottom of the plane. And then they said, you know what, we could pay these planes a few extra bucks for it, and they could put a better reflector on the bottom of them, and we'd have phenomenal service. I'm trying to tell you that was 20 years ago, and the problems on that were worked out mathematically. So guess what? Now you're getting mad at having to pay $100 for all this data service. But every one of them is GPS'd. Every one of them has the ability to do what? Tell us not only where we are, but they could do temperature readings, couldn't they? They could do barometric readings, don't you think? And then guess what? You got all of those billions of data points, and you just give them back to the meteorologist. Don't you think that might help us on insect infestations? We used to like to say in economics, we love to have meteorologists around because they gave us economist credibility. Except the interesting thing is, unlike in economics, meteorologists have gotten better. Okay? They're not 47 percenters. In fact, what's happened is their 5-day forecast is now as accurate as their 3-day forecast used to be because they have more data points. So get ready, folks, for big data and big number crunches. And if you do that, then they might do what? They might take off $20, or they might just pay you to carry it around. Get ready, folks. We are babes in the woods. Phenomenal applications for that. Put them together, though, and you've got the ability to finally see. The problem with this thing is it's human scale. Small, fits in your pocket, but it's not. My wife is constantly texting me, and I just call her. She goes, why don't you text me? And I go, because it takes me an hour to say, what? And I'm a baby boomer. I know how to text. Except I want to text in complete sentences. And I want the subject and the predicate to match. And where is the semicolon? I just call you. Okay. It's not human scale, though. But this is. Okay. And I don't work for Amazon. But this is human scale, and this is the game changer. Okay? This is what changes the world. Not the Kindle, but the fact that this thing, do you see how thin it is? $3,500. And if I'm near cell service and have it, Amazon says I can get a book in a minute. Everywhere in the world where I've been, and I've tried it, and I've tried it everywhere in the world, if I've got cell service, it doesn't take a minute, it takes 15 seconds. So suddenly I get to travel with my library. And suddenly, if I don't have it, guess what? I can download it. Folks, if you are a Star Trek fan or 2001 fan of HAL, whether you're a fan or not, we are in this world of ubiquitous computing. It is all around us. And all you got to do is ask, and it will be delivered. And that changes everything. I'll tell you, I'd leave you too, that it does change. Okay. What do we do in education right now? Those of you that are college students know. Same thing we've done for 150 years, which is what? Somebody does like we do this morning. Somebody stands up and pontificates or professes. Few sit passively and absorb. And then I send you home with homework to make sure you weren't texting while I was talking. Great model, not knocking it. But wait a minute, what about in this world? Because I had this conversation. You understand, Amazon, interesting model. They started out trying to do what? Give you books as fast as possible and the widest selection of anybody in the world. And guess what they're trying to do now? Trying to get out of the book business. Because 4 years ago, they started selling more e-books than they did real books. And they sell more real books than anybody in the world. Because guess what? 3,500 books, I buy books. But guess what? I buy a whole bunch because I'm just sitting there. And I download it and I got it. Okay? And now it's 15% of college textbooks. I had this argument with a chemistry prof the other day. I said, hey, this is it. Get ready for it. Okay. He said, well, you know, in economics, well, where you've not had an original thought in 30 years, yes, we can have an e-book. But for chemistry, we will need very complicated text with colors and photographs. And you're like, oh, really? Let's see. I get to the part where you add a base to an acid. I read about it, but with this, it's got a hyperlink underneath it. I hit it. And suddenly a world-class professor in a world-class laboratory, I don't know where, in any language that I choose, shows me what happens when you add a base to an acid. Think I might like that. So here's the change. How about you get the lecture anytime, any place, anywhere you want to? And you come to class. And we do the homework. Because I need you in class, because people need people. It's called flipping. And it's going to change education faster in the next decade than at any time in history. Get ready. And I'll go out on a limb. I don't need your sons and daughters at New Mexico State University or your nieces and nephews 4 years to get them a degree. In a flipped world, I need them too. And you go, that's not possible. Folks, the dedicated students right now already come with a year to 2 years already done. But get ready for the other resolution. It's called the information world. And in the seed business, you've done it better than anybody. Biology went nowhere. All we did was taxonomy. Let's classify it, put scientific names on it, and we know where we're going to put it. When we started breaking biology down into its component chemical parts, we mimicked what Thomas Jefferson instinctively knew years ago in his nomenclature of the world, because he put agriculture in the knowledge of the world under chemistry. Biology has exploded, and so has the seed industry, because we've got into the information world, and now we just put what we need in those seeds, don't we? That's information. Get ready for all of that. And one final thing, when you got all this data, 20 years ago, an interesting thing, I met this guy in Santa Fe, New Mexico. He called it then a 3D faxer. But what it was is he had his engineers fax it to the top of a fax machine sitting on something the size of this riser. He had powdered PVC powder in it. And he said, just wait for, I call it my cooker. Just wait for 30 minutes. He opens the door. Out came a perfectly formed PVC elbow. He did that one 20 years ago. Now you know him as what? 3D assemblers, okay? You build atom by atom, molecule by molecule. Somebody, when they did that in the printing industry, I guess, overnight, guess what? Those $100,000 offset printers did what? Got thrown away because a $399 inkjet printer did the same thing almost as good. We entered the information age of printing. And guess what? Did you read about this one? Just came out in Science News. We just printed a perfectly formed piece of leather that panelists cannot tell from real leather. And the same company is doing it for meat. And yeah, you can tell the difference because they haven't made a steak yet, but you can't tell the difference between their structured inkjet printed meat from ground beef. Oh, get ready. It's going to be weird. But who's going to own it? Those of us that... No? Plants? And animals? And people? This is the golden age of agriculture. Thanks for letting me be part of it.